Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Well, last week, my guest was journalist and author Leslie Kane, whose most recent book explores the evidence for life after death. The book is called Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. And as I said in the lead-in to that show, if you caught it, I think there are two big questions that most people have, compared to which everything else is really just details. And those questions are we alone in the universe, or is there intelligent life elsewhere? And is there life after death? And as big as these questions are, mainstream science just doesn't deal with them. So a lot of the people who do deal with them are pseudoscientists, or in many cases, crackpots of different types. But Leslie, thankfully, is not one of those. She's an award-winning journalist who is curious enough and brave enough to tackle the question of life after death in a serious and objective way. And her book, again, is called Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. This week's show is the second of a two-part series on the book and what Leslie reports. The first show dealt with two related but different phenomena. First, with children who seem to remember the lives of people who've died as if they were their own past lives. And second, with people who die and are brought back to life by extreme medical intervention and what they experience during that transitional interlude. Now, in this second episode in the series, we'll get into the topics in the last two sections of the book, if you follow this so far. Part three of the book describes modern-day mediums, that is, people who connect with the spirits of the dead. And part four describes something really bizarre, which is materializations of the spirits of dead people in a physical form. Not exactly ghosts, but something like it. And you'll see what I mean when we get to that part. So, Leslie, welcome back.
Hi, Court. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. Good to have you back.
Thanks, Court.
I've always thought of mediums as quacks who were prevalent in the 19th and early 20th centuries and who made a living kind of in little dark rooms that were all mysteriously set up, preying on the desire of people to communicate with their dead loved ones using clever illusions and tricks. And I kind of really just thought it was a sort of a money-making parlor game for them. And you know, maybe I was wrong about that, or maybe there were a lot of them and some were real, but it turns out, in any case, that there are also modern mediums, and you went to visit some of these people. So just let's plunge in and tell us about it. What did you find?
Okay, and yes, there certainly are the types of mediums that you're describing. In fact, that's what I thought they were all about, too. There's all kinds of weirdnesses that everybody knows about. But what we're interested here are there any genuine mediums? And that's what I wanted to find out. And there are two types of mediumship. There's mental mediumship and physical mediumship. And what I'm interested in exploring right now with you is mental mediumship. And that's where a person will go sit down with a medium who knows nothing about them. And if it's working properly, the medium will bring in very specific information for the person there, which is called the sitter, that describes specific information from the person who is supposedly the loved one of the person sitting with them. So I had lost a very close friend and a brother during the time, or just before writing the book and during the time I was writing the book, and I was able to find two mediums who were highly, highly developed, who provided me with extraordinary readings, mediums who didn't even, we'll focus on the second one in particular. She was in Ireland. She didn't know my name. I took out a different email address so that when I contacted her, it wouldn't have my name in it. I made up a fake name. She knew absolutely nothing about me, and there was no way she could have traced me because I provided her with no information to do that. And we sat down on Skype, and she just provided a list of details that she described coming from my loved ones. And they were unbelievably accurate. They were things that she couldn't possibly have known. And the interesting thing, too, was that the personalities came through of both this friend of mine and my brother. This is genuine mediumship where accurate information is brought through that's proven to be accurate because the sitter knows whether it's accurate or not. And the big question that colors mental mediumship in the debate that people have about it is whether the information that's coming through is being provided by just the psychic ability of the medium. In other words, she's using her own telepathy or her own clairvoyance to provide you that information, getting it from your mind or from some other source, or whether the information is coming actually through the deceased person, which is how the medium experiences it. But it is quite amazing to sit down with somebody who knows nothing about you and have them provide all this very personal information from somebody who, apparently from somebody who you knew and loved. It's very powerful.
You know, I think some of the quacks figure out how to do that too, but it's probably more convincing if they do just physical things and someone's voice comes through and they're kind of giving general sort of answers. But the more specific the information and the contact is, I guess the more convincing it is. But
I mean, there are what we call cold readings, Court, which, you know, there's all kinds of techniques that people can develop to extract information and then read people's faces and all these techniques. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure that's what you're hitting on, but I was able to completely rule that out in these situations, in these two readings, one on the phone and one on Skype. There was just no way they could have been using that technique because of the specificity of the information. It just doesn't, you're right. It's very generalized information that can apply to a lot of different people. And, you know, that they can fool people into believing is specifically for them, but not when it's highly specific.
Right. In the setups where you either went to see somebody or you talked with them, like, what safeguards are set up to prevent fakery?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, is for them to know nothing about me, not even my name, to set it up so that there's no way in advance they could look up anything about you. So if I give them a fake name and use a different email address than the one I normally use, that's all they have. I mean, this woman in Ireland, that's all she had from me. We just set up a time and she gave me her Skype address. I called her and that was it. And she had, you know, she didn't even know my name. She didn't know where on the whole planet Earth I was. So when you're sitting with somebody like that and they immediately start talking to you about very specific things regarding this person who died and said, you know, it's very stunning. It's very awe-inspiring to have that experience and just mind-boggling. She says that this person was there and his personality was there as well. You know, the personalities come through. Mm-hmm. That's just as stunning as the information itself.
So did the spirit seem to have some special reason for wanting to communicate in this way? I mean, is it just that you're their loved one or, you know, beyond that, is there some thing that seems to drive the spirits who mediums mediate to want to come through?
Yeah, I mean, I think they will say that there's a powerful connection between the sitter and the deceased person. And if, you know, and I also meditated on these people for a couple days. I asked them to come through. So it's all about the energy. They say that the reason they come is because they feel that love and connection to you, the sitter, and your energy is kind of calling them in. And they want you to know that they're okay. I think that the mediums would describe that the main motivation of the spirits that do come through is to let their loved one know that they're okay, that they haven't died, that they're fine, that they're, you know, and maybe to resolve any past issues or anything. But it's more just to let the person know that they're okay and that they haven't died, that death is not the end of things. And so those two messages were, I'm fine and I'm not dead because I'm communicating with you. Those two messages can really change a person's life if they're willing to accept and believe that.
Yes, and not just in your own experience, but from everything you've read and heard in your investigations, do you have an impression that these spirits are in an unusual situation? I mean, are they in some sort of halfway house or something, or are they the same as spirits of all dead people?
I don't know. I mean, you know, again, as a journalist, it's so hard for me to know that. It's sort of speculative, but my sense of how it works from talking to mediums and from things I've read is that there definitely are sort of different levels that one will go to in the other side or whatever you want to call it. I think that the communication is most likely to happen, a communication like this, during the first few years or during, you know, a short time after the person dies. And I think after a period of time, perhaps they move on to somewhere else. But it seems that often when there's a strong bond with somebody, the deceased person is accessible for a while. So then maybe they do move on. But again, you know, that's something that we really can't answer unless you can read about it. But it's not really factual.
Well, I mean, you know, going back to our first show, maybe where they move on to is another life in another body.
Yeah, or they could just go on to learn. They talk about going to different things. They have things to learn and ways they're developing over there. And then, yeah, maybe they come back or maybe they don't. I wish I knew more about it.
Yeah, we all do. Well, roughly, if you know the answer to this question, I don't know if you do, but how many people worldwide are doing this? And then secondly, you know, who in your estimation are legitimate, right? Do you have any rough idea?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's a really, really good medium is a rarity. I've talked to some people who run various organizations where they actually run certification programs for mediums. So the mediums have to pass rigorous tests to become certified. There are two organizations that do this, one in Arizona and one in Long Island. And most of the mediums do not pass. It's probably maybe 10% of the media of the mediums that try to pass these tests and become certified as mediums can pass. The people who run these organizations that have talked to lots of mediums and have done a lot of research into mediumship have pointed out to me what a rarity it is to find a really, really good medium, and then to have the readings that I had were just really extraordinary, both of them. But I know other people that have had such readings. I mean, it does happen, of course, you know, but it's not like there's a lot of them out there that are at that level. But in terms of worldwide, I would have no idea.
Yeah,
I just don't know.
Clearly, it's a special talent, and I guess the ones who pass the test are those who have at least some level of that talent. But I'm wondering, you know, if you have any idea. I don't know how much you talked with these people kind of offline, but did they set about becoming mediums or just start to do it spontaneously or what? Do you have any idea?
It's a really good question, and that's one of the things I wanted to find out. So after I did both these readings with these two mediums, their name were Laura and Sandra, I interviewed them extensively to try to find out, like, how do they do this? How did it start? How did they develop? In their situations, both of them were kind of born with something. They just started to have these experiences as children where they would see dead people or they would know things that were going to happen. And as a child, they thought it was completely normal until they became old enough to realize that not everybody else has these experiences like they do. So they were born with some kind of a visionary ability. And a lot of the mediums, when they become teenagers, they kind of don't want to have it and they put it aside, and then they come back to it as adults and develop. But so neither one of the mediums that I dealt with had actually learned how to do this. And I think the more developed mediums would probably feel it's not something you can just go to school and learn how to do.
Yeah.
You either have the ability, it's just something innate, and they can't even explain why they have it or how it was there or anything. They just found that they were born like this. But, you know, there are places in the UK, for instance, there's like schools where they try to train mediums. But I think that it's probably difficult, unless you're born with some kind of an ability, it's probably very difficult to just become a medium.
It's kind of like art school. Some people have it and some don't. And those who don't are paying tuition to the school anyway. But
exactly. I think it is sort of like it's like a gift. You just have this gift and this ability to see into this world. Then they develop it and learn how to hone it and learn how to work with it. But it's something they have naturally.
Well, it kind of leads to the question, and we're going to shift in a minute here into the second part of this particular show. But are there modern day quacks? I mean, people who clearly, like the ones I described in the introduction to the show, who don't have that talent, but who pretend to, and, you know, kind of like an exaggerated or elaborate version of a fortune teller. You know, are there people like that?
Yeah, absolutely, Court. I'm sure that they're all over the place. I mean, you can walk around New York City where I live and see shops where they've got these crystal balls and stuff. Yeah, and there are a lot of mediums that want to be mediums but don't quite have the ability, but they're still doing readings for people, or they just don't have they're just not gifted, you know. I had some readings with some other mediums that didn't work out at all. So I think there are types that are complete charlatans that are trying to take advantage of people. There are others who just don't have a very good ability, but yet they'll still give readings and people come to them and they're just not developed. So there's the gamut. But yes, certainly there are people that hoax this stuff or that use cold reading techniques to try to fool people. And you have to be very careful. Don't go to a medium that hasn't been personally recommended. That's what I would say to people.
You are listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. And we're talking with journalist and author Leslie Kane. She's written a book called Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. And we're going to turn now to kind of the last part of her four-part book, which is called The Impossible Made Real. And it is the most kind of extreme and unearthly, so to speak, part of the book. You know, and to some extent, we're going to sound like we're running off the rails here a little bit, but I think just bear with us. You can tell we're both, sane people, or at least we put on a good front. and so, this last section, The Impossible Made Real, does describe something that's pretty fantastical, and it's something I'd never heard of before. So, Leslie, why don't you just tell us about it? And it's a different kind of mediumship. There's a different term for it.
Yeah, it's actually called physical mediumship, where it's very different than mental mediumship. There's just a lot of information that I provide in the book that leads up to this. I just want to warn people that when you take it out of context, like we're doing now, it can sound pretty strange. But I think if you read the book, you'll understand the validity of it. And it's something, physical mediumship has been studied over the for a long, long time. And there were scientists back in the early part of the century who documented events with physical mediumship that were absolutely so tightly controlled that there is no question that they were genuine. And some of those cases are really fascinating, and I focused on those in my book, and a lot of those involve the materialization of living hands. And these have been very well documented, as hard as it is to believe, among a lot of other phenomena that would occur around these mediums. But the one that really fascinated me was the materialization of a hand that people could touch and hold, and it was just like a normal hand. And this happened numerous times in very highly controlled cases that had scientific investigators working on them. And so if you fast forward to the present, I was able to find a medium in the United Kingdom by the name of Stuart Alexander, who's probably the greatest physical mediumship on the planet, as far as I know right now. He's been practicing for about 40 years. He's now 70 years old. And worked very, very hard to develop himself as a physical medium. And I was able to sit with his group in his we called a seance room in the UK, and myself experience the materialization of a living hand out of nothing. And as hard as that is to accept, I guarantee you that I'm telling the truth, that the room was thoroughly controlled. There was no hoaxing or cheating going on. And this is something he's able to manifest, and many other people have seen it over the years. It's been well documented. I'm not the first person by a long shot. So that is a very extraordinary thing to experience. And, you know, as far as the physical mediums are concerned, as far as Stuart is concerned, and the spirit people that work through him, because he's completely in trance when this happens, they, you know, they are trying to show us that death is not the end. And by manifesting these things physically, they are trying to show us that, indeed, this was actually the hand of one of Stuart's spirit beings who works through him. So the point of it all was to just show people that these spirit beings are still alive and that they're actually able to manifest these things to show us that we keep living after the physical body dies.
So was this hand, I mean, did it look, you know, flesh-colored like a regular hand? And was it a disembodied hand where it stopped at the wrist? Or, you know, was it like a hand-shaped glove floating around in the air? Or was it attached to something? I mean, give us a brief idea of what it looked like.
I'll have to be brief because I don't have a lot of time. But in the book, I actually have an artist who drew the whole thing. Yeah. So people who get the book can actually see what it looked like. But in a nutshell, there was a table sitting between me and the medium that had a red light on it. So that the whole thing was in red light, because you can't have bright light, or it disturbs the process. And this substance, which is called ectoplasm, it's a substance, it's kind of an energy substance that comes out of the medium's body. I know how strange this sounds, but I saw it. And this, you sort of see this cloud coming over the table. Now, the rest of the room is dark, so all that's lit up is the table. But you see this cloud coming over the table, and this cloud of dark sort of grayish cloud, you can just see it gradually take the shape of a hand. And then suddenly the hand becomes three-dimensional and bangs on the table and makes a loud bang, showing you that the hand is physical. And then I'm asked to put my hand down on the table, and the hand comes over, and I hold it in my hand. I mean, I can see it. It's the light isn't bright, so whether it's flesh-colored, it's hard to say, because it looks sort of dark in this light, but you can see the hand, mm-hmm. and it felt, the skin was very soft. It had all the fingernails and knuckles and everything that you would expect with a hand. It was very large and very warm. To me, those were the things that made it kind of unusual. Sometimes there's been other situations where a hand has appeared from a child. There was one case of that where through Stuart, where the hand was really small. So it varies. It was absolutely clearly physical, absolutely as physical as anything else. There was nothing ghostly about it once it appeared. And then it just withdrew at the same way that it came over the table. It kind of withdrew. So it was always connected to this ectoplasmic cloud. So I never kind of saw the other end of it. You know, it wasn't like floating around disembodied or anything like that.
What was your reaction? I mean, was your hair standing on end? Were you freaked out, terrified, or were you exhilarated or happy? Or, you know, what was your overall reaction to this experience?
I was exhilarated because I had actually read quite a lot about it beforehand. And I Stuart Alexander has written a memoir about his own mediumship. And so I was very kind of well-versed in what he does. And I was actually hoping that this would happen when I went, because you never know what's going to happen in every session. So it was something I was really hoping for. And it was just absolutely mind-blowing, exhilarating. There was nothing at all frightening to me about it, because when you're in the environment of that seance room, there's so much wonderful energy in there, a lot of love and harmony and excitement and laughter. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful environment to be in. And there's nothing frightening at all. So, yeah, it was just like unbelievable and phenomenal and exhilarating. It's hard to put into words, but very, very positive. Experience. And I had the experience numerous times, and I've also been there sitting really close to the table when other people have had the experience as well. So I've seen it many times. And just so people know, the medium's hands are attached with these cable ties to the arm of his chair, and they can only be removed with a wire cutter. And he's completely in trance, and there's absolutely impossible for this hand to have been provided by anybody in the room. There were very few people in the room when I was there. I mean, I can't go into all the detail about it, but there's absolutely no way that this was some kind of hoaxed situation.
Do you, or does Stuart, or do physiologists or scientists who might have looked at this, does anybody have any idea what this plasma is that you described coming out of the medium's body? And does it relate to anything conventional medicine or physiology would understand, as far as you know?
It's such a good question, Court. I mean, they've taken some of this substance. The problem with it is, and basically the times that it's been taken to a lab, it's just sort of skin cells from the medium's body.
Oh, you can cut it off and take it to a lab?
I mean, it's hard to do that, but it is like a physical substance that you can see. I mean, there are pictures of it. People have photographed it.
Yeah.
It looks sort of like cotton or cloth or, you know, something like that. And it'll come out of the medium's body, and there, you know, it depends on what the medium is capable of. But in some situations back in the early days, they were able to put some of it in a jar. And the problem is the light makes it disintegrate. But I think there were a few cells left in the bottle, and then they just found it was the skin cells of the medium. It doesn't reveal very much. It's just this bizarre substance that comes out of him. And the way they explain it is that the spirit beings who work through the physical medium are able to use that substance to do the things that they do. Yeah. They can also levitate things all over the room.
Yeah.
I've seen that as well. And that's also done through this, what they call ectoplasm, because there's like an ectoplasmic arm. And somehow the spirit energy, whatever you want to call it, the spirit people are able to use that, almost like clay. They can make it really solid. They can make it really light. They can use it to manipulate things in the room.
Wow.
And that's happened with physical mediumship, you know, many, many times over the years. It's a peculiar thing, really bizarre.
Well, I mean, when it first comes out, you described it as being kind of a whitish looking cloudy substance. Does it look like our classic idea of the ghost, kind of a white Casper the Friendly Ghost, kind of a white
cloud
thing?
Yeah, but it wouldn't be like shaped like anything. I mean, it just sort of comes out,
right?
You know, and it'll just sort of come down or out, and then the spirit energies use it.
Yeah, I understand.
To form what they need to form. So sometimes, yeah, I mean, there have been studies of mediums, yeah, where it depends on how much light there is. But there are situations where the ectoplasm will actually create a fully formed human being, a full person, not just a hand. And there are some, you know, mediums, very, very famous mediums over the years who have been able to, and that's where the full form materializations come in, which are absolutely mind-boggling, but they're
really
well-documented cases of mediums who exude this ectoplasm, which will then form into a person, which has physical form, and then it dissolves back into the ectoplasm after a while and goes back into the medium's body. I know how hard it is to accept as this is being true, but you have to study it and you have to read the research, and I've got a lot of references in my book to papers which documents this, so I find it so, that's why I find it so fascinating, because it is so hard to accept, yet it has happened. And so you have to ask, does this mean that we survive death? Well, that's what the physical mediums believe that this shows, because sometimes the people who materialize through this ectoplasm are actual people who died related to the people sitting in the room. And you might have a guest sitter who comes, and that person will see their dead husband materialize. And they're able to touch them or talk to them.
Oh, my gosh.
And that person obviously is going to believe that in the afterlife when they see something like that, right? So, and that's what the mediums will say the whole point of it is to show you that these people are still living.
It'd be kind of hard to fake a hologram of the person who's instantly recognizable to their former wife or their wife.
Exactly. Also it's physical.
Yeah, right.
You know, you can touch the person.
Oh, my gosh.
And you can, yeah, so it's very, very physical. Yeah. It's very, I've got a lot more I want to learn about this. I find it absolutely mind-boggling and fascinating.
Well, Leslie, we're kind of getting toward the end of the show, and I asked you at the end of the first episode of this two-part series whether you believed in the afterlife going in, and you said, well, you know, like most people, you're open-minded about the possibility, and we're hopeful that it would be the case. And I asked you whether these experiences had convinced you that it is, and you said, absolutely. And, you know, I urge people to read the book again, and I think it'll convince a lot of people just from reading the book, you know, second or third hand, so to speak. It's called Surviving Death by Leslie Kean, K-E-A-N. But I do want to ask you here, Leslie, has it changed your life or the way you live your life, these experiences?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have a sense of expanded consciousness. I have a sense of less fear of death, for sure. You know, much less fear of death. And I think a certain peacefulness about it all. I mean, you know, I've been very moved not only by the mediumship, but another point we didn't cover, which is in my book, I also felt that I was having some direct communications from my brother, which came directly to me, independent of a medium. And those things have been so powerful for me, Court, that yes, they've sort of made me feel that, you know, I haven't lost these people, and that it just gives you a bigger sense of life and a less of a fear of death, I think. I mean, I'd have to think more about how it's affected me, but it's certainly positive. Absolutely positive. And I think also this information is applicable to anybody, no matter what religion they are, because as you said in the beginning, you know, religions, or you said in the previous show, religions mostly believe in the afterlife. And this just provides you the evidence, the facts, the data that support that belief in the afterlife. So it doesn't have to just be a belief. It can be based on actual factual information.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, humans are very highly conscious animals, and so from the beginning of humanity, we've wondered about the afterlife and hoped that we didn't just end up being dust to dust, and that's all there is to it, and all the living we do in the meantime is for no purpose or reason. And so that's what a large part of what drives people to religion, and certainly drives an interest in this topic we've been talking about. So thanks for being on, Leslie.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
The book, again, is Surviving Death by Leslie Kean, K-E-A-N. You can get it on Amazon or at most booksellers, and you can find her on Facebook at Leslie Kean, L-E-S-L-I-E-K-E-A-N. And the book has its own website at survivingdeathkean.com, survivingdeathkean.com, one word. Well, it's been fun. I want to thank all of you for listening and for opening your minds and not being skeptical, and go get the book and read it. I guarantee you, it's not anything that's... that has an air of looniness to it at all. It's a very serious, well-researched, calmly written book, Surviving Death. I urge all of you to get it, and I urge you to tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.